Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios, and we are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. It is 5 o'clock, well, I should say 5 o'clock. It is 4 o'clock on this Friday because the Predators are coming up at 6 o'clock, so Chad Withrow joins us early from Outkick today, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Chad, 1 week from today, we will be in beautiful New Orleans, Louisiana, or at least I hope it'll be beautiful in New Orleans, Louisiana when we're there 1 week from today. Radio Row at the Super Bowl. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's time to start looking at the forecast, Jared. It's that time of the week where we can start looking at what it's going to be like weather-wise when we're in New Orleans. I have not peaked at a forecast yet, but like you, I hope that it is beautiful while we're there.
By the way, I was a little surprised that there's not a lot of stuff going on in New Orleans outside of the Super Bowl while we're there. There's not like a Pelicans game. There's not like a, there's just,
yeah,
I'm a little disappointed with that, but
it is not my favorite Super Bowl location. And I've been going to these since the end of the 2004 Super Bowl. So Super Bowl 40 in Detroit was my first one. So Detroit's a weird first Super Bowl to attend. First and foremost, has not been back since, but this is my second trip to New Orleans for a Super Bowl. I've been to Sugar Bowls there. I've been to some other events, but it is not the best host city. The NFL loves it, but I don't really get it. New Orleans is a pretty small city compared to some other places the game goes to when you really get down to it. So it's not my favorite, Jared, and you're right. There's not a ton going on next week.
By the way, I went to the Women's Final Four in New Orleans in 2013, and Louisville was in the national title game that year. And I was 23 years old and got so New Orleans'd out that I won and lost. Like, I think I won like $2,000 playing blackjack and lost all of it. Yeah, after having won it is my only New Orleans.
Did you lose all of it just spending it on Bourbon Street, or did you actually lose it gambling while at the casino?
No. I lost it trying to win $5,000.
I got you.
Or however much I was trying to, yeah, the chase. Which, you know, it feels bad when you lose $2,000, but when you started with, you know, basically nothing and you get up to $2,000, it is one thing. All right, enough shooting the breeze. Okay, to the Titans. So I watched the Cam Ward tape, Chad, and after watching the Cam Ward tape, I walked away saying, look, I think Cam Ward's a first round prospect. I see like a little Deshaun Watson in his game. You know, I think Deshaun probably is a better passer than Cam was, but kind of in the same way. I see a little bit of I see a little bit of like you know, like a poor man's Anthony Richardson, you know, from the standpoint that he doesn't have Richardson's size, arm strength, or athletic ability, but he's got,
by the way,
if he is
a poor man's Anthony Richardson, Jared, then that is a do not draft.
But I'm talking about from a talent standpoint.
Anthony Richardson's been terrible.
But I'm talking about from like a pure athletic talent standpoint. I think I see maybe a little Deshaun Watson in there, not a ton of Deshaun Watson, and I certainly don't have, you know, him dragon slaying Alabama the way that Deshaun Watson did. I'm convinced he's a first rounder. I just don't think he's a franchise quarterback. I don't think he's a top of the first round guy. And if I was Mike Borgonzi, Chad, I'm not sure I would risk my career on Cam Ward. You've watched a lot of Cam Ward. What do you make of Cam Ward? And if he is the best in this class, is it worth just taking him because he is a first round prospect and moving on from there?
Yeah, I need to watch more of him, honestly, to really gauge my full opinion on it. Here's what I think about Cam Ward. You mentioned some comps there. I don't want to set him up for failure by saying that he's Pat Mahomes, but I think just from an innovation of when he gets moving a little bit, he doesn't have the arm slots that Patrick Mahomes throws from in that level of it. But I've seen him make some throws in big games at Miami that made me say, wow, where I didn't know he's throwing across the body sometimes. He's rolling left and throwing it on a line to someone in the only spot it could go. So he did make a lot of wild throws at Miami. I'm not sure if he's, you know, first pick material or not, but I do think that if Mike Borgonzi or Chad Brinker or whoever's going to make the final call or whatever the decision is going to be, if they decide to trade back and they get a haul, it definitely buys all of them time, right? Like you mentioned it, the pressure of drafting the first round, first overall pick quarterback is so high because you are declaring this guy has the keys to the castle. He is our franchise quarterback, and everyone gets to judge him from the first game on. And if he's not very good, it's going to go downhill quickly. And if he's showing promise, well, great. You bought yourself some time there. But if you just continue to kick the can down the road and acquire a bunch of picks, which, by the way, the Titans need a bunch of picks if they decide to do that, I do think that it buys this regime more time as they can go and get in a fill-in quarterback for the time being, a bridge quarterback, so to speak, someone that can come in and be decent. And Matt Hasselbeck, when he was with the Titans, someone that comes in and gets the Titans back to some level of respectability while you continue to look for that big-time quarterback prospect in the draft.
What do you make of trading back and trying to still get one of the better players? And I say this because, you know, Ian Rappaport came out yesterday and said that he thinks both the Browns at 2 and the Giants at 3 are taking a quarterback. So if that's the case, I mean, that would be great news for the Titans, in my opinion, because then you can trade with the Giants at 3 and you could say, hey, this way you jump Cleveland and you get the quarterback you want. And I would assume that would be Cam Ward. You get the quarterback you want, and then Cleveland is stuck with the second quarterback if they have to take a quarterback, and you're still not dropping out of the Carter-Hunter range at that point. I do wonder, when we talk about trade backs, I keep wondering, okay, where do you trade to is going, in my opinion, to decide. And I wouldn't rule out the Patriots at 4 as a trade back candidate. They could deal next year's first round pick to move up to number 1 to get the best player in the draft, knowing that they won't need next year's first round pick for a quarterback. So I do wonder, when it comes to trading back, kind of what would your strategy be right now if you were the Titans?
Yeah, I like the scenario of the Giants, you know, coming up to get, let's say it's Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, whoever it is, to make sure they get their quarterback. I keep thinking about, man, Mike Vrabel drafting Jalen Carter for his first pick certainly makes a lot of sense for that to be the next move for the Patriots.
You mean Abdul Carter?
Sorry, yeah. What did I say?
Jalen Carter.
I got Jalen Hurts on my mind. I've been thinking a lot about Jalen Hurts.
Well, you said Jalen Carter, and I was like, dude, Mike Vrabel and Jalen Carter together, that'd be pretty nasty.
Yeah, yeah. So, I've been thinking and working on the show for today about Jalen Carter, so that's what I was saying about that. Anyways, I think that's a good spot for the Patriots, right? If that's their guy, if they wanted to come up and get the best player, and he's the best player to them, that's a possible trade-up option. I mean, if you're the Titans, like, is there a team even further down the line? Like, how far are you willing to drop to ensure that you're getting these? I mean, what's the number, 30 picks or whatever it is that Mike Borgonzi threw out, and you want to get so many of them in the first 3 rounds? Like, the way to do that is to find someone that's willing to give up everything in the draft to trade up to number 1 to draft one of these quarterbacks, and that might not be a team that's sitting there at 3 or 4. So, look, there's a lot of possibilities for the Titans, and there's not a lot of ways to really screw it up unless you draft a terrible quarterback.
So,
right? I mean, if you trade back and get more picks, you're gonna land on somebody that's going to be good, and then you're going to get multiple picks, so somebody's going to turn out okay, you would think, if this group knows what they're doing at all. But, Jared, it's the risk-reward. If you stick and pick at number 1 and draft a quarterback, if that quarterback is awful, then you've set the franchise back even more.
Well, I guess I ask this, which is, if you're the Titans and if you don't love one of these quarterbacks, because I think Titan fans see the traditional number 1 pick trades, and I'm like, if you're the Titans and you don't love one of these quarterbacks, what is the expectation that the other teams will love these quarterbacks too? I mean, it's not like the Titans don't need a quarterback. In 2016, they were able to make that trade with the Rams because they had drafted Marcus Mariota with the 2nd overall pick the year before. But I'm not sure I've really ever seen a draft where there's like a superstar generational talent and a team that has the pick doesn't need a quarterback and still trades out of it, at least in the modern era. So if Cam Ward is good-ish, but not good enough for you, why would he be good enough for the Giants, or why would he be good enough for the Browns, or one of those teams?
Well, everybody's got their own flavor that they like, and I can't pretend to know what the Giants are doing at times. They've made some questionable decisions. I mean, it's not beyond one of these teams to just have a bad evaluation on someone, that they see something in a prospect that the other team doesn't see, and vice versa. I mean, the Titans could be looking back years from now and saying, oh, my goodness, we traded away the chance to draft Cam Ward, the great Cam Ward, who comes in the league and is an MVP at some point. I mean, these are the risks that you're taking one way or the other. But it's like the old adage goes. I mean, it takes one team. If there's one team out there that loves, and I mean loves, one of these two quarterbacks, you could get a lot in return if you're the Titans, if you don't love one of these two quarterbacks, which we don't know. And if the Titans and Mike Borgonzi are good at their jobs, by the way, we're never going to know up until draft day, right? We're not going to know what they think about the quarterbacks. We're not going to know what they really think about trading back for the picks. They're going to keep all their cards close to the chest, and they're not going to let us know anything or tip anything that's out there. So,
well, aren't you going to know, though? Aren't you going to know, though, if they sign Tyrod Taylor to be the quarterback in free agency that they're taking a quarterback?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, we thought we knew with the Falcons when they signed Kirk Cousins, and then they drafted Michael Penix Jr. So, no, I mean, look, you could still sign some veteran and then decide, well, you know, we couldn't get a trade partner, we're going to draft a quarterback also. It's not highly likely, but it's possible to do that. So, no, I don't think so. I think we're going to get little signs here and there that's going to tip it a little bit. But, again, I want to go back to having an organization that plays chess and not checkers. And I don't want the Titans to get too cute for their own good or any of that. But I want them to be good at their jobs. And I'm hopeful. The more I hear from Mike Borgonzi, who's a very good talker, unlike the last guy who was in that spot, very good talker, very good at communication. I'm hopeful that he's going to be a great GM and this thing's going to get back in the right direction.
Chad Withrow with us on the program. Would you, just what you saw in college, I know you haven't studied him to an extent, would you take J.J. McCarthy over Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders? Because there was another report today that came out in The Athletic where some of these league executives told Jeff Howe they would take the entire quarterback class last year ahead of the two quarterbacks this year.
I would not. I am not a J.J. McCarthy guy. I do not see it. I thought he was a fine quarterback for what Michigan asked of him. I thought he did a great job in that national championship season, obviously. But I don't see him as some dynamic NFL prospect. So I think everybody else, based on what we saw this season, those first-round picks, yeah, I would take all of them. Penix, Bo Nix, obviously Daniels. I mean, go down the list. I'm taking those guys over Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders because we've already seen also a year of what they can do. Not J.J. McCarthy. Coming in with the injury also. I honestly think I would take both Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders over J.J. McCarthy.
Really? What about what about Penix and Nix?
Yeah, Penix and Nix, like I said, I those guys are better than Ward. I love Michael Penix Jr. as a prospect. So I would take those guys as a prospect. Now, again, I've got the beauty of hindsight where I've seen them play for a year. Would I have taken Bo Nix over Cam Ward a year ago if I had not seen Bo Nix play in the NFL, if they were both coming out? Probably not. But Bo Nix surprised me because he's teamed up with Sean Payton in Denver, and it's the perfect fit. So I'm taking Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix Jr. I'm taking those first-round quarterbacks from last year over Sanders or Ward, with the exception of J.J. McCarthy, who I would put behind both Ward and Sanders.
More with Chad Withrow coming up. It's the Hot Seat next. Stillman & Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chad Withrow with us from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. So, Chad, do you have a thought, or do you want to go right to the hot seat?
You know how much I love the hot seat. Let's get to it.
Number one, should the Buffalo Bills fire Sean McDermott for not being able to get over the Kansas City hump once again?
No, I think that would be a mistake, and I think that it would I don't think it would help the locker room. I think the Bills have something good with their culture and in that locker room and Josh Allen leading them, and I don't think they're in need of a disruptor of that, and firing Sean McDermott would do that. Now, look, Sean McDermott has got to prove that he can get through this game, and he's not done that yet. I get it, but I don't think rocking the apple cart to that level would be wise for the Bills, especially considering, I mean, it's just so tough when you look at that conference right now with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and with Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. Burrow had, you know, an MVP type year, but his defense was terrible this year. Cincinnati's going to be back. It's a crazy good AFC right now, and the Bills are crazy good. and they just could not find a way to get over the hump again in this one, but I'm not firing the coach because of that.
Number two, why does Steve Spagnuolo get overlooked for head coaching opportunities?
You know, we talked about this with Armando Salguero about Kick yesterday, and he was very careful to not say too much. But we asked him the same question, Jared, and he said, you know, there are just some guys who are great coordinators and assistant coaches that leave a really bad taste in everyone's mouth as a head coach. And that seems to be the knock on Spagnuolo. He's been great. Hunt and I were arguing, if you're the AFC West, let's say you're the Raiders with a job opening, if you want to affect that division that is great, go hire Spags away from a division rival to be the head coach, because he's been so good as their defensive coordinator. So you're getting a good defensive mind and as your head coach, and you're taking away your rival's defensive brain. So that would seem like a good move, right? But he's 63 years old, and apparently it's not an interviewing problem. It's just his situation in St. Louis when he was there was so bad that it seems like teams are just kind of out on him as a head coach and see him as a great coordinator that's not head coaching material.
Number three, your thoughts on Bill Haslam's new WNBA bid with the Tennessee Summit.
You know, if Caitlin Clark had not just had this explosion into women's basketball and to the WNBA in interest and viewership is up and everything else, I would kind of treat this like, you know, it's kind of like the soccer team in town, which I'm like, hey, it's great. You know, you got an MLS team, but I don't care about the MLS. I'm not going to do backflips over anything with it. That would be my reaction to a WNBA team. But when you put Bill Haslam and Peyton Manning and Tim McGraw and Faith Hill and Candace Parker into this ownership group that's clearly going to be led by Haslam, who already owns a team, look, I think it's great. I love the name. I love the tribute to Pat Summitt. And if you think about Tennessee as a girls and women's basketball state, there's not one that's better. I mean, Indiana is a basketball state. Kentucky's a basketball state. Kansas is a basketball state. Certainly UConn is known for women's basketball, but I don't think of Connecticut as a great girls basketball state. Because of the influx of Pat Summitt and all the success early on with the Lady Vols when women's basketball was just becoming a thing in this country, and then all of the high school programs across the state that tried to emulate the Lady Vols and what Pat Summitt was doing. Tennessee's got great girls basketball. It's got great culture already ingrained in it. I think it's a slam dunk, Jared. I didn't think I'd be saying that if you told me this a year or two ago, but I think it's going to be great for the city. I love it. I hope it happens.
By the way, how about Michaela Blakes at Vanderbilt yesterday with an SEC record, 53 points, and a freshman record of 53 points in Vandy's 99-86 win over Florida yesterday? I mean, like, that's the kind of stuff that, look, if Vandy has somebody on their team that's dropping 53 a night, I will be paying more attention to Vandy women's basketball.
And look, this is what – here's what I'll say about both Vandy teams right now. This is the way it should be. Like, this is what Vandy can do. They're not a great historic program, neither men's or women's basketball, but they're good enough, and they're in a city where they can have success. They have some NIL money. They've got a historic venue. Like, what we're seeing right now, with I think the Vandy men last I saw were going to be like maybe a 7 seed in the tournament or 9, somewhere around there, projected right now. Like, this is great. This is where Vandy basketball could live. I'm not expecting them to go to Final Fours or, you know, be the number one team in the country consistently or anything like that. But they should be a good rival to Tennessee. Those games should be competitive. We know when I grew up, a lot of times it was Tennessee would kill Vandy at Thompson Bowling Arena and Vandy would squeak out a win at Memorial Gym. But the games were always great and highly anticipated. This is what's good for the area in college basketball. I think it's great for Vanderbilt. They found two really good coaches. And they've got some stars on both teams. So I know you were there last week, but, I mean, tip of the hat to both coaches and what they've been able to accomplish.
So it's funny that you say that because my question was going to be, my next hot seat question for you was going to be, how much respect has Vanderbilt earned from Chad Withrow in the last year? And I'm talking all-encompassing Vandy football, basketball, women's basketball, et cetera.
Yeah, a lot more than I had a year ago, for sure. I mean, you know, think about a year ago, Clark Lee was kind of limping in to year number 4 off a terrible season. The basketball program held on to Jerry Stackhouse probably too long. You're bringing in a guy that you liked in Byington but didn't know a lot about it. Women's basketball has been pretty irrelevant for a while. Baseball has slipped under Tim Corbin, and that was their calling card for so long. So things look pretty bleak, but it's amazing, Jared, what happens when you invest a little bit of money, and I know they're improving facilities, but when you hire the right coaches. And I think Shea Ralph is the right coach. I certainly think Mark Byington is the right coach. I think Clark Lee is the right coach for what Vanderbilt needs right now. And he's found a good formula for football to be pretty successful. And by Vanderbilt standards, very successful to get to a bowl game. So, I mean, look, if you're buying stock right now, I would certainly buy stock in the doors. It's headed in the right direction. So I've got a lot more respect than I did before. Now let's sustain it, right? Let's not – what you don't want to have is Mark Byington leaves after 1 year to go somewhere else or something crazy like that happens, and then it sets you back even more. Make the commitment, continue with it, and let's keep this thing rolling. I know that's what Vanderbilt fans want.
Arch Manning has opened as the Heisman Trophy favorite, according to ESPN Bet, at plus 750. Are you buying or selling Arch Manning for the Heisman next year?
I'm selling for the Heisman right now. It's tough for me to go with, you know, this was like the talk with Nico a year ago. Oh, he's fifth in the Heisman odds coming into the season. And that was just simply because Josh Heupel scores a lot of points. His offenses are really good. And this guy's a highly sought after quarterback prospect. We still don't know enough about Arch Manning as a player in the SEC for me to say that he's the Heisman Trophy favorite. So if you ask me right now today, without really seeing him lead the team in big games yet, I'm selling on Arch Manning.
I will tell you, I think I just need to see Arch play more before I can get all, like, people will text in and say, you know, Arch needs to be the number one pick next year and the Titans need a tank for him. And I'm like, I need to see him play a little bit more football.
I think he's going to be good. Yeah, like I'm not a doubter. I think he's going to be fine with Steve Sarkisian and the players he's going to have around him and that offense and his ability to run and throw. I think he's going to be good. I'm like you though, Jared. I hesitate to say, well, this guy's the Heisman Trophy winner and he's going to put up stats that are off the chart and Texas is going to be there in the national championship game next year. I can't say that because we haven't seen him enough. I mean, when he checks into the game, it was like the Tim Tebow in 2006, where you know he's going to run every time he checked into the game. So it's not like, you know, he started a couple games in the middle of the year when Ewers was injured, but I just don't think we've seen enough yet. There's been flashes, but we just have not seen close to enough.
The Titans reportedly loved their meeting with Shedeur Sanders. Are you buying that Shedeur Sanders might be wowing teams in the meetings?
I buy it. I mean, the guy grew up around a microphone and a camera, so he knows how to handle himself in those settings, and he's been around his dad, who's done it forever. So, yeah, I think that he's got some savvy when it comes to meeting face-to-face with people, getting in front of a group of people. I think he's got the ability to control things the way he wants to control them. So I think he's going to be great in these interviews. I really do. Now, does that make him better than Cam Ward? I don't think so right now, but I do think that he's going to do very well in the team interviews.
Last one for you. What do you make of the Justin Tucker allegations that came from the Ravens kicker?
I'm thinking, man, when the Deshaun Watson news came out, that dude must have been sweating.
Dude, I thought the same thing.
I was like, holy cow, can you imagine when that story's blowing up and that's all everyone is talking about? And you're thinking, man, this sounds a lot like what I've been doing at these salons, and they asked me not to come back. There's that tweet that's out there from 2021 where someone called it and said that he's been banned from multiple salons in Baltimore. So, I mean, look, this is a thing that's been around for a while. We don't know their allegations right now. He's obviously, you know, thoroughly denying it. I mean, you couldn't have a more complete denial than his lawyers and him from it. So there's two sides to every story. I don't know what's true and what's not, but I am thinking, Jared, if he did do these things, golly, the amount of sweat pouring off his forehead the moment those Deshaun Watson allegations broke.
So I thought the exact same thing, which was, okay, as I read the story, and I'm like, okay, so these allegations occur from 2012 to 2016. So I'm like, so if this guy is getting banned from these spas in 2014, he's probably not thinking a whole lot much of anything other than, oh, yeah, the spa owner banned me, but it'll be fine. And then 8 years later, Deshaun Watson starts getting, you know, I don't want to say drug through the mud because he did this to himself, but starts getting exposed, both literally and figuratively, for this, you know, the massage stuff. And he must be sitting there sweating bullets at the idea of like, wait a minute, I've already been banned from a couple massages in town because I was inappropriate with the staff. And then here's my part. He came out and said that it's all a lie and that, you know, they always say it's a lie. I have a hard time believing him when the owners of the spas have gone on the record and say, yeah, we terminated our relationship with him as a client because of inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, I do too. But I'll also say this, like, if you go through the allegations and maybe I missed one, it doesn't rise to the level of aggression of Deshaun Watson with some of the allegations. So it is a pretty easy thing to say, like, it was a misunderstanding, you know, like I get it. Like, and look, the salon's going to take the side of their employees. So if some woman is uncomfortable by someone for whatever reason, if they come in and say, this guy makes me uncomfortable, they're not filming the sessions. There's no proof of exactly what went down, but you're going to side with your employee and say, hey man, we can't have you back because you made her uncomfortable. Right. And I'm not saying what they're saying is a lie or any of that, but that's kind of how those things go. It's very similar. It's the Deshaun Watson playbook in a lot of ways. But I did read the allegations and think there's enough gray area here where you, I guess, could claim that there were mixed signals or something about what was actually happening and this and that. But regardless, I mean, it's clearly a bad look for Justin Tucker, however this turns out.
Will you be watching the Senior Bowl tomorrow?
I will not. No, I'll be watching college basketball tomorrow.
I'll
spend a lot of time doing that.
I tried to watch the East-West Shrine game last night. I had it on for about 5 minutes and turned it off.
I'll be watching Tennessee try to not lose three straight against number 5 Florida, a team they just lost by 32 a couple weeks ago. So that's going to be very interesting. I'll be watching that tomorrow, and obviously Carolina Duke, even though UNC is not very good.
Now Calipari, Arkansas versus
Calipari, Arkansas too. Yeah, I'm going to tune in for that one also. Although I think Kentucky's liable to destroy them.
Arkansas sucks so bad. I mean, it's just really taken the juice out of the excitement for that.
It really has, and they lost their best player to injury. They were sucking already, and then lost Boogie Flan. So it really zaps a lot of the excitement from that and that team. Just watching them in general, and watching Cal in his first year at Arkansas.
Chad Withrow from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee, as always on our program. Chad, great stuff.
All right, thanks, Jared.
Stillman & Company, 102.5 The Game.
Cam Ward should be at the top of this list. And I say that hesitantly, but nevertheless, I'm going to agree with Mike T on this. Shador has all the intangibles, and we love the poise. We love the pedigree. We know where he gets what he gets, what he has from. He can make the requisite throws. He can chunk up some yards on the ground, but he's not that mobile. So listen to what they say about him. His arm is not that strong. He's not that mobile, but he's a winner. He finds a way to get things done. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we've said about the Brock Purdy's of the world and others. Obviously, I think Shador is an upgrade from that athletically, but nevertheless, that's what we're talking about here. When you look at Cam Ward, 67% of his passes completed, 4,313 yards, FBS best, 39 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions. Played 5 years in college, 5 years. In that time span, 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio. We can't ignore that. And so he has size, he has arm strength, he has all of those different things. And so when you look at it from that standpoint, let's say you're talking about Cleveland, let's say you're talking about Tennessee, let's say you're talking about New York, I think you have to take those confines into consideration as opposed to somebody playing indoors or somebody playing in confines like Los Angeles, for example. I think those things have to get taken into consideration. And your size, your durability, your arm strength, I think those things have to come into play when you talk about playing in inclement weather in the National Football League against grown men.
That was Stephen A. Smith. I don't know how much Cam Morty's actually watched, but that was his take. So I did watch the tape on Cam Ward, and here's what I came away with. Number one, Cam Ward is a first-round prospect, but he is not, in my opinion, like some kind of generational prospect or anything like that. Number two, Cam Ward kind of reminds me a little of Anthony Richardson, but he's not as physically gifted as Richardson, but he has way more experience than Richardson. A little bit of Deshaun Watson, but he's not the pocket passer Deshaun is. A little bit of Kyler, but not the athlete Kyler was. A little bit of Daniel Jones, but with more talent throwing the ball. You know, there wasn't one guy I could circle and say, okay, this is who he reminds me of. Number three, again, he's a good athlete, but he is not an elite athlete. He is not Lamar Jackson. He is not Jalen Milroe. He is not Anthony Richardson. He's more Jalen Hurts-ish. And he's got some wow in him, number four, like some serious wow on some of the plays he makes. Number five, he either can't recognize the blitz or he doesn't care to recognize the blitz, and that will not fly in the National Football League. And six, in spite of the fact that people will say, well, he's a little careless with the football, and well, he's got a little YOLO to him, well, he's got a good arm, well, he's got a... He is absolutely nothing like Will Levis. Will Levis is tight and uncomfortable, and Cam is a very fluid athlete. There is a significant difference between the two, though the outcome may end up being the same. Final analysis, the meetings will be really important. You know, does he inspire you? Do you think that you'll go to war with him? Will he put the work in? And I don't have the answers to that. But I feel much more comfortable taking Cam Ward at 16 than I would at number one. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, Stillman & Company, order 25 the game. Stillman & Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We got something to give away. Be caller number, actually be the first caller right now at 615-737-1025, and you'll win a pair of tickets to Belmont's women's basketball game against Murray State this Saturday. Tip-off set for 4 o'clock. That's tomorrow, as both teams are ranked in the top 50 of the nation, and the Belmont women's coach, Bart Brooks, joins us now on the program. First of all, Bart, we haven't talked in a while, and I want to start with this. It must be very exciting to have Murray State in the house in a top 50 matchup tomorrow at 4 o'clock at the Curb Center.
Hey, it's great to be here, Jared. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, I tell you what, playing meaningful basketball games in the month of February, it gets me going. And I know people who love basketball, a break from the NFL, and we got a great opportunity to play a really good team in our home gym tomorrow. So I'm excited about it.
So when it comes to a game of this magnitude, how do you go about, you know, I guess it's not March yet, but it will be February. How do you go about managing a game like that, given the circumstances?
Yeah, I think internally, you know, when you're a coach and you're coaching your team and you're talking to your team, I tell them all the time that we're not going to get a trophy for tomorrow's game. We're not going to, it's not like it's going to make or break our season. Either way, whatever happens, it's just an opportunity to see where we are. But I tell you what, from an outside perspective, meaningful games, you know, two teams, 8-1 in the conference, both of us coming in the 50s in the net, in the national rankings, and two really, really good teams, really good programs, and a lot of talented players. So I tell you what, we look forward to these games, and we get a chance to play it at the Curb Event Center tomorrow, and I'm very excited myself, and I know our players, I'm trying to keep them level and emotionally grounded, but I think it's going to be a great atmosphere, a great environment, a great game.
Murray State, and, you know, this kind of a rivalry. I mean, I remember even the John Morant kind of rivalry with Belmont. How do you view the Murray State rivalry?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really fun to compete against that program, and they've got Rochelle Turner, their coach, does a great job, and they've got a player, Caitlin Young, who's been there. This is her fifth year, and feel like I've been playing against her for 10 years. She's really talented. She's scored over 2,400 points in her career already, and one of the most accomplished players to ever play women's basketball. And so we get a chance to play those guys. It's always a great game. Doesn't matter if records are out the window when you play your rivals. And tomorrow, the cool thing about tomorrow is we're both really good and should be a great game.
Bart, I actually have an interesting question for you. Bart Brooks is our guest, the Belmont women's coach. They play Murray State tomorrow at the Curb Center at 4 o'clock. Yesterday I was kind of caught off guard when I saw the announcement that Bill Haslam was putting a group together with Peyton Manning and Candace Parker and, you know, trying to launch a WNBA team, a bid for a WNBA team. At your level, when you see something like that and that comes across your desk, from a grassroots women's basketball standpoint, what do you make of it?
Well, I love it. I love that there's high profile athletes from other sports involved in women's basketball, involved in women's sports, involved in supporting and starting to grow our game. And I think for our players and just knowing so many of these WNBA players, these professional athletes who it's so challenging to get jobs in the WNBA. There's so few roster spots. So the more teams we can get, there's really talented players that have played their whole lives overseas that no one's got a chance to see them play since college. And it's really cool. And I think the game has grown. The talent pool is richer now than it's ever been. And I think we're going to see a lot more happen here in the next handful of years because of that. The resources from outside, and it's really cool news. Obviously, excited about it.
Can I put you on the hot seat with a question that I really just don't know the answer to?
Let's do it.
How much does a WNBA head coach make?
I don't have that answer either, but I tell you what, we've had two college coaches, Lynn Roberts at Utah and Carl Smesko at Florida Gulf Coast, take WNBA jobs this year. So. It's the first year, and I think the WNBA has been a place where, a lot of coaches aspire to take good college jobs for the longest time. And this year, I think that trend is starting to turn where there's some really good college coaches that are moving in that direction. So I wish I knew. I don't have an answer to that.
Wonder if that's him campaigning for the women's job at the I kid. Bart, good luck tomorrow against Murray State. Thank you so much, and thank you for the tickets that we just gave away. As always, good luck tomorrow.
Thank you, Jared. Appreciate you.
Yep, that's Bart Brooks, the head coach of the Belmont women's team. And again, they will be in action tomorrow, 4 o'clock at the Curb Center, taking on Murray State. First place on the line in the conference. Very exciting times. With that, it's Predators game day.
It's hockey night in Smashville.
Off over to Yossi. His one-timer is scored!
Bringing you the keys to victory and the latest storylines surrounding the Nashville Predators. This is Predators Game Day, now on Stillman & Company.
Predators on the road for an early one. Predators Game Day presented by TJ Anderson Homes and Benchmark Realty, online at tjandersonhomes.com. Get your house seen, heard, and sold with TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. By the way, in the email where they have all the info, I am getting clips for the Tennessee Summit now as well with the Predators. Predators on the road tonight taking on Buffalo. So start time is 6 o'clock, which is why we're out of here afterwards. And Ian, I did check today with Max. I texted Max. I guess Pete is going to be on the call today, even though it's a road game.
Mm-hmm. It's so Buffalo, it's a trip for Pete.
Homecoming. So I checked with Max, and I said, who's starting in net? By the way, the Predators are 18-24-7, and Buffalo not much better at 19-26-5. Boy, Predators got a lot of games in hand, eh? And the Predators are favored, according to ESPN Bet. They're -125 and minus a goal and a half. So I guess Buffalo's really struggling. But I asked Max, I said, who's starting in net? And Max said that he's not there, but that according to Morning Skate, it looks like the big juice, not the little juice, UC Saros will not be in net, but Eustace Annanen? Did I say that right?
Yes.
Eustace Annanen will be
Annanen,
in net.
Yep.
Let me say this. I want Saros in net because I want Saros to start winning because UC Saros needs to start paying what he owes. And I heard Andrew Burnett this morning on the morning show talking about how he thinks he's one of the best goalies in the game and he's an elite goaltender. And look, the coach has to say what he has to say, but let's not kid ourselves. Elite goalies do not lead the league in losses. They don't. Elite goalies win playoff series. This guy doesn't. So it's time for him to start paying what he owes. That's it for us. We are out of here. Everybody have a great weekend. Max has the pregame next. We will be live from Radio Row in New Orleans on Monday for Stillman and Company from the Super Bowl. 102.5 The Game.